Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, broadcasting from Seattle, Washington. Once again, we have on our show today Dr. Philip Skell, Emeritus Evan Pugh Professor at Pennsylvania State University, and a member of the National Academy of Sciences. As we talked about in a prior podcast with Dr. Skell, his research has looked at everything from the development of vaccines, antibiotic vaccines, to free atom chemistry and the chemistry of carbonium atoms. We're very thankful to have you back in the studio with us here. Dr. Skell, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, as our listeners know, in the first interview, we discussed, we began to discuss Dr. Skell's journey from being basically a standard Darwinian to being a skeptic of Darwinian evolution. And Dr. Skell told us that it was actually the writings of Michael Polanyi, a very famous chemist in his own right, that started to influence his views on evolution. And I was hoping, Dr. Skell, if you could continue this story for our listeners and maybe even backtrack a little bit to your coming around to being a Darwin skeptic. So originally, you were sort of a standard pro-Darwinian scientist, is that correct?
Yes, I think that would be a correct description of my active career years. It was only in retirement that I began to explore things about Darwinism that had not occurred to me as a consequence of my prior education and thinking. The gentleman you refer to, Michael Polanyi, is a very famous scientist who became interested in philosophy and metaphysics in the later years of his life and wrote about the nature of knowledge in a way that, as a chemist, I could understand since he spoke the same language as I did. At any rate, after reading Michael Polanyi, I returned to think about the work I had done with antibiotics as a postdoctoral during World War II. And I asked myself the question, when during that period did we consider Darwinian concepts as an important ingredient in finding new antibiotics? And the answer I realized was never. We never talked about Darwinian concepts during the years in which I was engaged in that research. And it came as no surprise to me then when I came across recently quotations from all of the famous personages who contributed to this important area of antibiotics, saying essentially the same thing.
Wow.
That Darwinian concepts had played no role in directing their work to the discovery of new antibiotics. At that point, I began to wonder whether this was a more general phenomena than I had recognized regarding the work of antibiotics, and I took advantage of my position at Penn State University, where I had an opportunity to listen to experts, worldwide experts in the biosciences, talk about their research in our colloquium program. They were willing to talk with me in private after they had given their lecture, and I did a survey of their thoughts related to this question. I asked them, would they have done the research they had just described any differently if they had thought that Darwin's theory was wrong? And their answer I got back from the great many persons I talked with was uniformly the same. In my work, it would have made no difference.
Wow.
And this made me ask myself, where would it have made a difference if this broad-ranged group of people working on the frontier of biological science said that it would have made no difference to their work whether they thought Darwinian concepts were true or not true? It convinced me that they were not finding Darwinian concepts important ingredients in the carrying out of their pioneering biological research.
Wow.
This accorded with my own description of what my experience had been when, after retirement, I had thought about the problem of the discovery of antibiotics. But I decided to explore this further by examining the 100 Nobel Prizes in biology-related areas over the past century.
This is good experimental design for assessing your question here. I'm just keep thinking over and over
again. And I could not find among them any that had been awarded the Nobel Prize for their breakthrough discoveries that I could recognize depended on Darwinian concepts to design the experimental work on which their discoveries were based and which were awarded the Nobel Prizes. So here again, the Darwinian theory did not provide the guidance that was necessary for those great breakthrough discoveries.
And Dr. Skill, you wrote an article in The Scientist a couple years ago where you talked about some of these views. And this was an article published, I believe, in the August 29th, 2005 issue of The Scientist entitled, "Why Do We Invoke Darwin?" And in that article you wrote that Darwinian evolution, whatever its other virtues, does not provide a fruitful heuristic in experimental biology. What do you mean by heuristic? And I guess could you just reiterate then what is the heuristic value of Darwinian evolution, just so our listeners can understand what you mean when you say that?
One can't think of scientific theories in two major categories. There are those that I would call the grand paradigm theories, which attempt to understand a very broad part of the science they're concerned with. Among those would be theories such as Einstein's relativity theory, and Darwin's theory would be one of the theories that would be part of that grand paradigm group of theories. I'd already pointed out in the last discussion that the Darwin's grand paradigm theory had made no contribution to the scientists who were seeking new antibiotics, and that had been my experience too. I realized that none of my research depended on grand paradigm theories to lay out the kind of experimentation that was necessary for a breakthrough of knowledge or a breakthrough that might be important to the public who pay for the very expensive research that we scientists do.
Dr. Skell, one of my favorite parts of your article from The Scientist is where you talk about sort of the lack of any types of predictions that come from Darwinian theory. And if you don't mind, I'd like to just read a short excerpt from your article, which I think is very insightful, and maybe you could comment on it. You wrote, "Darwinian explanations for such things are often too supple. Natural selection makes humans self-centered and aggressive, except when it makes them altruistic and peaceable. Or natural selection produces viral men who eagerly spread their seed, except when it prefers men who are faithful protectors and providers. When an explanation is so supple that it can explain any behavior, it is difficult to test it experimentally, much less use it as a catalyst for scientific discovery." I just think that's a very insightful quote. Can you comment on that quote for us?
Yes. There are great theories which contribute importantly to our way of understanding broad matters. But the kinds of theories which enable the scientists to make breakthrough discoveries of new knowledge and new utility don't depend on those same theories. They depend on what I call modest working hypotheses, and I'll give you an illustration of a modest working hypothesis that engaged scientists in an important problem. This relates to the question of tumor growth, cancerous tumors. a scientist looking at a tumor is first impressed by the fact that the tumor is covered with blood vessels. And these blood vessels were supplied by the host that was going to be killed by this tumor. And the question that occurs to a scientist is how and why does a host produce blood vessels that are going to be the source of its death?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that raises questions of this sort. What causes new blood vessels to grow?
Uh-huh.
And this is an important area of investigation, which the scientist is able to do by asking that question and then designing experiments that will demonstrate to him that certain factors result in the production of new blood vessels. The hope, of course, is in this research project is that once having discovered what causes new blood vessels to grow and, in fact, grow on the tumor and feed the tumor, one might hope that a medical cure could be effected by finding a way to prevent new blood vessels from growing.
Mm.
And this is an important area of current research.
Mm.
What I'd like you to notice, though, is that the questions that were asked and the design, that these questions are ones that help to design the experiments that would give us a better understanding of this whole problem, had nothing to do with the grand paradigm theory of biology,
mm-hmm.
mainly Darwin's theory of evolution.
Sure.
It depended on a totally different kind of activity. And it is my observation, which I think has now been confirmed in many ways, general, that the great breakthroughs in biology, as characterized by the Nobel Prizes and the frontier people that I've talked with, is that the grand paradigm theory, Darwin's theory, whether right or wrong, played no role in these important discoveries.
Wow.
And these important discoveries are ultimately what makes the public willing and happy to support with their tax dollars further research. It is not the notion of whether or not we evolved millions or billions of years ago from some organism or other, but it is a question of what practical problems can be solved with the science that we know.
Mm.
And what I am saying is that Darwin's theory, whether right or wrong, and this characterizes my skepticism, is not a matter of it being right or wrong, but is a question of what utility is
sure.
it in biological research.
Sure.
And my notion that I suggest to you is that it has very little, if any, utility in solving the important problems that the general public would like biologists to work on and to find solutions where there are problems.
Dr. Skell, thank you so much for doing these interviews with us. This is very fascinating. I'm sure that our listeners are very much enjoying hearing from a member of the National Academy of Sciences on this topic. I think we're just about out of time for this interview, but maybe we'll have some more. Dr. Philip Skell, member of the National Academy of Sciences and professor emeritus at Pennsylvania State University. Thank you very much for being on our show. This is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery president is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future managing editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.